Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Chris, you still there?
Technical difficulties. I didn't know who was supposed to be leading in, so we're off to a great start.
Stumbling out of the gate, as always. From The Spot, brought to you by Haspen Sports and the Titans Pro Shop, this is covering your EPL talk, your U.S. men's national team, and a little bit of Nashville FC sprinkled in. He's Chris Jones. I'm Dan Bradley. Good morning, Chris. How are you doing this morning?
Well, you know, 3 points over the Red Devils, all is right in the world as far as I'm concerned.
It looked good doing it, too. It was a pretty interesting week for Chelsea fans. You're looking at kind of one of the guys was brought in to be one of the futures of the club as shipped off to United, of all places, right after the game in a masterful move by the Chelsea brass. And there's a lot to like there if you're a Chelsea fan. We were talking before, Aaron. Chelsea's not a club that likes to pocket money. So I know, is there, right off the bat, Chelsea now has an influx of cash, what, around 60-something million U.S.? Any hopes and dreams pinned to that money already?
Well, I mean, the hard part is pinpointing one particular, player, because you hear, so when it comes to Chelsea, they're mentioned in every single player possible that's looking to make a move. You know, it may sound silly coming off a week where one of the strikers, scored 3 goals in one game, but I'm going to stick to my guns here and say, I would love for, maybe even get rid of Dembélé, take whatever you get for him, 10, 20 million if you can get that, and just shoot for the moon, go for a well-known forward. And just complete the team, because that's the only thing they're lacking. I mean, you look at Chelsea, they're very, very balanced right now. They've got a defensive line with two solid holding mids, and the creativity with Willian and Hazard, there's not a weakness in this team besides possibly the forwards.
And it's kind of, they're going to need to make the, it's not just so much the best striker available, I think, with Chelsea, maybe the right guy for them, because their midfield is the one who's, under Mourinho's system, is the one that creates and sets the table for the strikers. It's not, you're not counting on a guy like since he's going to be mentioned, Robert Lewandowski, who's known to be his own target and create his own chances. Is there a particular guy out there you think that fits Mourinho's system better than others?
It's kind of a hard question, because even as they win, he changes things constantly. So it's hard to pinpoint what exactly he's looking for in that forward. Look at this past game, the forward, Eto really didn't get a lot of touches. I think I saw one stat that one of the commentators was talking about. It was only his fifth touch in the game before he scored. And, I want to retract the statement that I made on social media to you, Dan, that, his goals weren't very impressive, and I'm still looking for impressive goals. When I go back and look at that first one, and we can run through them one by one if we have to, but, Eto gets that in a very non-dangerous kind of spot. He's got a lot of defenders in front of him. He's outside the box. It looks like he's covered up by Jones. And then he just absolutely works Jones to where you feel bad for the guy. He looks like he's going to be the equivalent of a soccer poster, in the NBA when you posterize someone. That looked like what you would consider posterizing someone in soccer. And then, you know, he gets a little bit of luck from the deflection, but overall, a great individual effort to get that goal. So, long story short, it's just I don't know who would be that right person.
Yeah, the way Eto'o was playing in there, you would have thought that he would have been a he thought this would have happened sooner. Because, you know, in that offense, we make another basketball analogy. You don't have to be Michael Jordan. You need to be Shaq. You need to be the guy who's going to hang around the goal, get deflections, redirect shots, and just create havoc. And that's what Eto'o did really well for many years in AC Milan and for Barcelona, where he was a little bit more athletic back in those days. But it's cool to see a kind of a blast from the past, a guy like him get another run. And this is the club for him to do it. He's not going to be asked to do too much at Chelsea.
Right. Well, maybe I'm not saying this just because of his transfer from, or not transfer, but his loan from Chelsea. But when you look around the league, specifically the EPL, probably the best fit for Mourinho and Chelsea is Lukaku. Because you need it, like you said, you need a guy that can just kind of hold his ground up there. It doesn't have to be very flamboyant. Just needs to not turn it over in the attacking third, and make the best of his chances when he gets them. And that really kind of describes Lukaku to a T.
Yeah, he's kind of a big guy who can hold his ground, and again, be another guy who can clean up the garbage with it. What was the issue with Juan Mata, though? I mean, I know that I know that Mourinho's style's a bit different than the previous regime on there, but why would he not? Why was he not a good fit there?
Honestly, you got me, because I'm a huge, huge Juan Mata fan. So, as much as I love getting the 3 points and seeing Manchester, go down even further. It's really painful to go to see Mata in that red shirt. Big fan of the guy. He came in and really gave Chelsea a spark, and that creative mid and everything they needed at the time that he was brought over. Really had high hopes for him and Torres being Spanish internationals, and I believe they've played together in club before. I could be wrong, but I was really looking forward to maybe having Mata as a center forward, Torres the lone striker up there, and those two working off each other. For some reason, it just never came to fruition. I don't know exactly why. I mean, he is a creative guy. He can create chances for his forwards, and that's what you want. I mean, that's what Hazard and Willian and Ramirez, all these guys are doing. But I guess it was just a matter of someone's got to be the guy left out, and that's who Mourinho chose to leave out.
Yeah, I was also, I think, a guy that could sell for and get the most profit for him, too. Chelsea made a cool £13.5 million off the deal. United are paying £37 million for the guy. United now going to be sitting with Rooney, who's approaching 30. Van Persie's around that area, too, and now Mata, who's 25. That's not old in any other sport. Soccer, football, right around 28 to 30 is kind of where you start seeing the skills decline for him, because the power is the last thing to leave the body. Speed is the first thing to leave the body. With United style, they're pretty much – this screams two things for me for United, and see if this makes any sense. United have to make the Champions League for two reasons. One, reputation. If you look across the pantheon of the EPL right now, and you have your top four, and then let's include Manchester City in there just for the hell of it. These are clubs that have all made their living and made their reputation as of late by making flashy transfers, playing fun football, with the exception of Chelsea, who kind of play more of a defensive style, but they can counterattack anybody to death. You have United, who's largely built on Sir Alex Ferguson, who's no longer there, and players like Kagawa, who transferred from Borussia Dortmund to United because it meant something. It meant more to where he was from. It means more to the people of Japan if you're playing for United than it is any other club over there because of all the Asian influence.
Right.
You have to make the Champions League if you're United, because you need to keep that reputation going. But also, this is not a club that has some incredibly wealthy oil tycoon pushing the buttons on it. This is a club that it still has a ton of debt to pay off, and for the balance sheet, they have to make the Champions League. That's what this move screamed to me, is that United right now is all hands on deck. We have to make the top four.
Well, if they don't, I mean, they fall into, not in name, obviously, but they fall into the Tottenham trap, where they're, you know, it becomes increasingly difficult to attract the talent you need to get out of that Europa or even, you know, even the sixth spot. Let's say they just stay at six. It becomes very hard to attract that talent if you're not in champion. You know, and I don't know if I'm the first to call it that, but it's the Tottenham trap. They're always just good enough, but they can't get that player to put them above into champions. But see, the weird thing is, when looking at Manchester, now granted, Mata now maybe trumps this statement, but when you look at them, if you take out Rooney, you take out Van Persie, where is the world-class talent? You know what I mean? Like, there's you can't pinpoint, okay, now this is the next guy in line. With Chelsea, Manchester City, Arsenal, you really have to kind of like think about, okay, who really is their best two? I would be hard pressed to tell you who's Chelsea's best two players, because on any given day, somebody, whether it's, you know, two or three guys, look amazing, week in and week out. With Manchester United, you don't see that. It's a much different team when Van Persie and Rooney is out. Now, Hernandez, you know, continued to have success against Chelsea. Maybe they should have had him in there the whole damn time, because I think he scores at least one goal every time he plays Chelsea. But, you know, Hernandez is taking a slip. They're playing hard, but there's just something not there. You know, maybe it's just as simple as believing. You know, we've talked about that on the Happy Hour show, where these young guys, and granted, most of these teams are constructed with 20 to 25-year-olds, so they're still young guys. Confidence is a hell of a thing. You know, sometimes confidence can trump talent. We see it in upsets in every sport possible, where one team has no business beating or even being on the same field as another team. But right now, Manchester United doesn't seem to have that confidence, and they're, you know, it's showing in the polls.
And it's a scary thought when you're United, because these aren't – I mean, you mentioned a lot of guys who are 20 to 25. Not the case with United. When you asked me a second ago, who are their best two players, and I'm thinking maybe Michael Carrick and Vidic. And those are two guys that are approaching 30. Those are two guys that have been on this, have been wearing red for, what, the last 5-6 years? They should know better than this. I mean, David De Gea might be world-class in the right situation, but just like you said, everybody else, they were world-class maybe about 3 years ago. And that's not a slight against them. They've had great careers, but you look at them, there's every other team that they're competing with right now, that top seven group, and if you want to include Newcastle, if you're being extra generous today, why not? Everyone else in that group is a younger team than them. I mean, that could be telling towards the second half of the season, not to be overly cliche, but it doesn't get any easier for them. But
They've got a good talent in, I always try to butcher his name, Yanezai. He looks solid, but thinking back of that Chelsea game, one thing that kind of stood out to me was, you know, granted, Ivanovic pushes a lot of people around, but, I mean, he was just one arm in Yanezai to where he was completely pushing him off the ball. I mean, he needs to get a little more strength on him. He needs to get a little more size. As we know, the EPL is a very demanding league. It's not all about flash and speed. It started to get a little bit more that way, but traditionally, I'm going to put a shoulder into your shoulder. You better be able to hold your ground. You know, all these kind of different things. So he's a good talent that Manchester has. You know, maybe paired with Mata in the middle, they can get a little more out of him. But he's definitely got to get stronger on the ball.
Yeah, that's pretty well put on that. I mean, especially when you have teams at the top like Arsenal, City, and Chelsea, who are willing to bring in the foreign talent that are a little bit more on the finesse side of the game and not the big hulking English guys by soccer standards to push anybody around. United are going to have to adapt. And we said this when the season started, and we said this on whenever we first started doing the show, whenever I first started doing the show with you. United is the one team that's still built in that 1990 style of the midfield,
Right. Funnels
the ball to the strikers, 4-4-2 or something similar to it, and almost cookie cutter compared to the fluidness that Chelsea and City have. And you look at what Liverpool's been able to do just with a few smart signings. You got it. I mean, Liverpool was in that same mold, too. They were still depending on guys like Steven Gerrard. Bless his heart, Jamie Carragher. That's a name I haven't heard in a good while, but guys like him, they were depending on those type of guys to carry the water for him. They bring in Suarez, and it's a game-changer for the entire team. And they're putting a lot on Mata. I saw today where United is giving him number 7. For those who aren't as familiar with United culture, number 7 was given to George Best, David Beckham, and Cristiano Ronaldo. Pretty tough act to follow. The last guy to wear 7
was
Ronaldo. No, there's 3 of the best all time to ever play in England, let alone for United. So this season, they're bringing him in as a guy to not only save the season, but a guy that possibly they might want to build around. The only trouble is the guy's 25, and he's right now reaching his ceiling, whereas he had put him on par with some of the guys that we're seeing across the league right now, like Lukaku, who has a few years on.
Yeah, I mean, because
it's
cause
like
Chelsea,
United started to chase.
With Chelsea, it really kind of started with, I guess we're going to give him some credit, ABB really brought in an influx of creativity. You know, he wanted to play that wide open play. Now it's kind of been honed down a little bit with Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho, to where it's a little more traditional. But I mean, they kind of did right exactly what you said. I mean, they went out there and got tons of Brazilian players, which, you know, it's Joga Benito, and they, with a influx a little bit of some Belgian players. Two international squads, not to get off topic here, that obviously Brazil is, everyone's like, well, you're a really good insight there. Brazil, look out for them. But they haven't been the same team the last couple competitions that they were in years past. Guess what, folks? Brazil is going to be legit this coming year. You look at the talent and at the top level they're playing, my vote is them or Belgium, takes home the World Cup. But anyways, So yeah, they're built. Chelsea, Manchester City, they're built in this new grain, new vein of the EPL.
And it's making it the reason why the EPL is the league that it is here in America is because it's entertaining, and we're now in a transitional than a more of a hodgepodge of other parts of the world because they want the exposure. Players want that kind of exposure. And it's the reason why we get the EPL on our television sets, not the German league. And we have to go digging for the Italian league and the French league and even the Spanish league. Even though the Spanish league has 2 of the largest clubs in the world, but other than that, it's terrible television. Then you got guys like Lukaku. You got guys like Flamini and a lot of the Belgian influence you talked about. And I was just messing around with it today. And how much of this do you believe is just development of leagues like the German league and leagues like the Belgian league, who are spending a little bit extra time with homegrown talent? And I'm kind of getting a little bit off track on this, but do you think that's going to affect England's chances, not just in this World Cup, but in the future World Cups as far as England's chances?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you compare what England's putting out to what Belgium, what even Poland's putting out. I mean, don't look now, but Poland isn't terrible on the attacking end of the field at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, when you look at England's squad internationally, throw away the fact that it's England. They're not scary. They're really not.
No.
You know, it's probably one of the worst English international teams that they put out in quite a while. A lot of it's like you said, the domestic leagues in these countries, with the exception of Brazil, have really, it's almost like a community reinvestment act. You know, they're funneling that money right back into local talent within their country. England, at the sake of their international club or international team, has not done that. You know, they've been more concerned with putting the best product as a league on the field, no matter where they come from, and that's great for you and I, but it has damaged their national side. And, you know, it kind of goes back to all these people want to bash Major League Soccer and say, you know, we need more international players. We need to open up the books to do that. That's not Major League Soccer's mission. You know, Major League Soccer's mission is to grow and develop American talent and try to provide the best product they can while doing that. And that's what they're doing, in my opinion. I mean, we're kind of bouncing around a lot here, but it goes back to your point with England. Look at where this is the mecca of soccer. This is the birthplace. This is where the best players are supposed to be born and raised, and they're falling behind at the sake, you know, because they're too concerned with the league that they host.
Perfect. You said it. I mean, this is a possible back four for England. Andrews Townsend, Jack Wilshere, Leighton Baines. No. I mean, that's Gary Cahill. These guys, Glenn
Johnson.
Look,
I was going to say, you know, man, I know I'm partial to Chelsea, and I try not to make this a Chelsea show, but, I mean, even though they're older, Cahill and Terry are playing amazing. They're one of the two positions on Chelsea's side that don't change. David Luiz barely gets playing time anymore. They've almost resorted to putting him in like a defensive mid, holding mid position just so he can get on the pitch. Those two guys are playing great even at their age right now. Now, Ashley Cole, no. Ashley Cole's on his way out. But the two in the middle.
How is Ashley Cole still in the league? How is he? I don't get it. I mean, is he like? Is he using the deer antler spray or something? Or
it's a good question. You know, he's a serviceable backup right now, and it sounds so weird saying that about Ashley Cole. But they've just got better options right now at that left back position. You know, you could see him transferring maybe in the off season. I don't see it happening in January, especially considering it, you know, it's almost closed. But I really feel like this is probably his last season at Chelsea.
Yeah,
like an Everton, or he goes to a Newcastle, or maybe he tries to go French or Spanish league. Who knows?
MLS.
Hey, somebody. That's the thing, though. Would an MLS club pay that designated player money for a defender? Has it been done yet? I don't think it has. I could be wrong.
No, and he's not a guy that would really put butts in the seats either. I mean, no offense to Ashley Cole, but I don't think any casual fan is going to suddenly make a club decision because of Ashley Cole being signed, unless they're the world's biggest Ashley Cole fan.
Right.
So when we see Portland Timbers play, we have some red Ashley Cole jerseys from his days at Arsenal in the crowd. We'll be happily proven wrong. Going back to the one last bit on the Mata deal, and you and I talked about this as soon as it happened. Whenever the news came down, when you look at Chelsea's schedule, they don't play United again. This deal was announced almost 24 hours after Chelsea beat United 3-1. Hey, this only screams United struggling like hell to stay in the Champions League race, but this is Chelsea being smart. United have to play everybody else now other than Chelsea, and kind of one of those enemy of my enemy is my friend.
I was about to say. So, yeah, well done.
Yeah. It makes sense on both fronts. I'm a little bit worried that Chelsea may have if Mata turns out to be the real deal, which it's all possibility he could, because Chelsea's had a great eye for talent over the years and they know how to use him, but it's always, you don't want to mortgage the future just to compete in the present. And
yeah,
is a league title worth it? Yeah, in the current pantheon, yeah, they'll make it all back, but I don't want to get your thoughts on that. Would you like this strategy, and do you see more teams starting to do this and use loan deals? Like, I mean, Chelsea knew what they were doing, loaning Lukaku to Everton. They had That's a smart loan deal because Everton's going to be just good enough to compete for a Champions League spot and just enough to maybe create a little bit of parity, but it's Everton. You know, there's some serious limitations with Everton's roster and how Everton spins and playing that crummy little 36,000-seat stadium that we call home. You know, we know what we're destined for, the Tottenham curse. It's Chelsea's been smart like that.
It's the timing. It's almost like I don't want to give them too much credit and say that was their plan. They looked at the schedule and that was their plan of after this Manchester game, then let's unload him. I think maybe a big portion of it is just a coincidence. I could be wrong in that, but yeah, I mean, it turns out to just be an absolutely just brilliant transfer. They, like you said, they don't have to play United anymore. You give them a weapon, and I do believe he's a weapon. When he was getting significant playing time, he was EPL. Hell, they gave him the 10. You know, I mean, he was wearing the 10 at Chelsea. So I think he's going to be great at Manchester United. I fully believe that he'll be, a major cog in the Red Devils' success next year. But maybe I don't see him getting back up to that fourth spot. I don't think Liverpool is playing bad enough to drop out of there. I think Everton's playing well enough to keep Manchester United at bay. So, but we'll see. I don't know. Overall, it's for the current situation. It was a great move. As a Mata fan, I hated it. But when you go back and you look, because there was a couple things I wanted to throw out there before, because we don't have much left. One cool thing that happened on that game was actually Jose Mourinho became the fastest coach in EPL history to get to 100 wins. So it took him 142 matches to get 100 wins. That's freaking ridiculous. You look at who comes after him, and this is no shabby list. You got Sir Alex Ferguson at 162, Arsene Wenger at 179, Rafa Benitez 181, and Kenny Dalglish at 197, all to get 100 wins. So to be at the top of that list is pretty damn impressive.
What Mourinho's done everywhere he's been has been nothing but impressive. He gets people, some of the best managers in any sport. When you can get talented guys to play together and play defense, that's a mark of a great motivator and a great manager. Because that's what no one really wants to do. And that's where you get the gritty defensive guys, your Gary Neville's and your crew like that to play defense. Now, he's getting starlets to play defense. And that's a mark of a great manager.
Well, and the thing with him, sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once there. The thing with him is he's still undefeated at home in EPL games. A lot of people forget that. It's somewhere up in the range of 70 matches or 60, somewhere between 60 and 70 matches now where he, as in the EPL, has not lost a game at home at Chelsea. Pretty damn impressive.
That's just one of those – that's trivial right there. That's practically a trivial question just because it's awesome. Hey, who does that? I had one for you right quick.
Okay.
The Ballon d'Or. Who do you believe? Do you believe the Ballon d'Or will be ever awarded, or any next time the Ballon d'Or will be awarded inside the EPL? Because when I'm looking at the previous winners of which this is the voted as the FIFA Player of the World or the best player current, the best club player in the world. The last 3 years, or the 3 years before last year, Lionel Messi, 2010, 11, 12. Cristiano Ronaldo took it in 2013. Messi took second. In the past 4 years, first, second, and third place have either been from Barcelona or Real Madrid. The one outlier was Franck Ribéry for Bayern got third place last year. There hasn't been, in the last 4 years, there has not been anybody from the EPL who's finished first, second, or third. Is that just because these teams are just so top-loaded? Because all three of those teams, that Barcelona, Real, and now even Bayern Munich, are just so top-heavy, that it may be taking a team to make the man a champion, or what's – I can't even explain it.
I don't – because now Neymar is on Barcelona, you're going to be seeing him in those top three for the next 5, 6, 7 years, I'm sure. So I don't see in the foreseeable future anyone not from those two squads winning it. But having said that, if I had to pick someone in the EPL right now, that, and it's difficult because the guy I want to go to, and I know we've beat people over the head with Chelsea, I want to go with Eden Hazard. But the only thing that would keep him from being in those top three is that he is a midfielder. He doesn't score the goals that typically the winner of that award has to score. But if you take that out and you look at his overall game, he's lights out. He's not quite as flamboyant and quite as, you know, flashy as Messi, but you stick him on any team in the world, and he's arguably your best player, any club in the world, right now the way he's playing. So he could be one I could see jump in there. I'm struggling to think of anyone else in the EPL that I think could get into the top three.
I think Suarez could.
You're right. That's a good call. Yeah, Suarez definitely. You probably could put him in front of Eden Hazard right now. I think we talked about this last week, where in ESPN did a poll of the top player in the world within the U.S. It was Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. And Suarez was a distant third. When the world poll results were, Suarez was actually number one, as what the world felt on that particular poll was the best player in the world at that time.
I think Suarez has had the more impressive year because of the competition he's doing it against. I know that sounds like an SEC argument, but I think it's actually a similar argument we made a couple weeks ago. If I'm looking through here, the last EPL player to win the Ballon d'Or was 2008 when it was Ronaldo. The last Englishman to win it, and this is kind of a funny. Yeah. 1978-79, Kevin Keegan won it. He was playing for Hamburg at the time. He was an Englishman, but the English player playing for an English club was Michael Owen in 2001.
Michael Owen. Yeah. And okay.
Yeah. And since then, he has not even finished in the. In the top three since.
Yeah, it's just, because like you said earlier, the English game until the last few years has not been a game that really sets you up for individual success. So I don't know how much that kind of plays into it or not. Real quick before we get going here, another little quick word from one of our sponsors. NFL Spring League registration for soccer actually opens February 1st, my birthday. So I want to give that out to everyone listening and wants to play in some NFL leagues. Two more points that I wanted to throw out there, and I'm sure you saw this. In that Manchester United game, towards the end, it got a little reckless. You had Vidic's red card and Raphael's miraculous only a yellow card. I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that, because to me, at least with Vidic, it looked like he was, he had sort of a position and was kind of making a play at the ball. Raphael was studs up, both feet going right into, towards the shins. Luckily, he didn't make much contact, but really surprised he didn't get a red there as well.
Yeah, that turned a bad game into an ugly game, and that's not what you want if you're United. If you're going to be the team that exudes class and for everything that's good about English football, that's a bad move to make on a national stage like that. But maybe that was the final straw to management saying, all right, the guys are frustrated. It doesn't justify what he did at all, but that may have been what set this whole Juan Mata train in motion, knowing that this team right now is frustrated because they don't have the talent to compete with City, with Chelsea. They don't have it right now. They need to get younger. And that was a young guy right there making a very bad decision that, you know, that only Roy Keane should be allowed to make those decisions in Manchester.
Well, I mean, it's one thing not to play well. You know, you can possibly not fault a manager for that. Players sometimes don't play well. But it's another thing to not have discipline. You know, discipline is directly controlled by a manager and directly controlled by a player. You know, I can have the best intentions as a player, and I'm playing my guts out. But sometimes the ball just doesn't go where you want it to go. It doesn't do what you want it to do. Discipline is a product of a decision. And those were definitely lack of discipline there at the end of the game.
Yeah, that turned an ugly day for United into something that was just that turned it into worse. This is now going to be one of those memorable games that will stick with United fans. The problem is that there are just so many of them happening the same year. And this is going to be a year to forget. This is maybe that one year that United needs to just take their lumps, reevaluate themselves as a club, and figure out what they're going to do. And, you know, they're going to be a club that's going to – they could stand to learn a thing or two, actually, from Arsenal. And they're a club that I like to criticize because I think they do just enough to make it to the Champions League. And they're more about their bottom line than anything else, which is a damn shame given the talent that they have. It would take a club like United – years to purge everything they have out of their system and to emulate what Arsenal does. Because Arsenal have, for years, I mean, they are their namesake. They are an arsenal of young talent. They've gotten guys in from all over the globe who want to come to Arsenal to play for Arsene Wenger. So then they can be sold to Barcelona or Real Madrid and make an absolute killing. That's what Arsenal's become. They've become the West Ham of the 90s. Where guys like Frank Lampard would go to West Ham United and Rio Ferdinand would go to West Ham, learn their craft, take their lumps, and then be drafted into the big boy school like United and Chelsea. That's what Arsenal become for attacking players.
I saw a picture on social media the other day. It was pretty funny. It was making fun of Arsene Wenger taking a stab at Chelsea of why would you – I don't understand why Modify was sold and particularly why you would sell players to a rival like that. And then underneath that, it said, did you forget about, and it had Arsene Wenger, Van Persie being transferred to Manchester United. It had Samir Nasri getting transferred to Manchester City. And there was a couple of players I'm forgetting right now, but it was like, come on, man. Before you make a comment like that, just go back to the last two or three seasons. You know, y'all are the most guilty party ever of giving your rivals and your biggest competitors your best players.
That's the most hypocritical thing you could have possibly said. It's one of those things
that,
like,
I read that quote.
Like, you don't want
seriously?
You don't want to have a. You don't want to get financial counseling from MC Hammer. All right, there are some things you just don't. You know that some people should not get into, and that's exactly what you did.
Yeah,
that's a
good analogy. Wait, when you look at with all that being said, they're still sitting on top of the table. It's been well documented. The points. I mean, you look at Arsenal 51. On down to, you know, 50, 49, 43, 43 for the top five there of City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham. What kind of stands out to me was two things. One, even the goals score or the goal differential, even that's tight. With the exception of Manchester City, you got Arsenal at plus 24, Chelsea at plus 23, Liverpool at plus 25. You could possibly see this situation again with not including Manchester City because they're plus 38. You could see this thing come down to, you know, three teams being decided by one or two goals on the season. That's pretty insane.
Right now, Sports Club Stats has Manchester City as the favorite at 37%, Arsenal behind them at 33.7%, Chelsea at 25.4%. It's literally a three-horse dead heat right now.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun right now, and then you have this. Then you have a second class with Liverpool, Tottenham, and Everton, all within shooting distance of the top four. Right now, Liverpool at a just under 60% chance, Everton at just over 33%, and Tottenham with an outside shot at 15.4%. Which means United are scheduled right now, if everything goes as planned, to get seventh. Wow.
Which as an Everton fan, what would frustrate me? One of the stats we have lost in translation here is they have 9 draws. If you just – let's just say you take 4 of those draws away and give them wins, okay? That's a realistic expectation. So So they still have five draws at that point. If you change four of those draws to wins, that's eight more points. They're now sitting tied for second place in the EPL at 50 points.
They had a barn burner draw with Liverpool where they led 3-2. If they literally just hold on and don't let Suarez score that one last goal, right now they're in Champions League at 45
points. Yeah, they're in fourth
place
at 44, or 45, you're right.
Yeah. No, you're right, 44.
44, okay.
Yeah, and it's a totally different. I mean, it's not the end of the world right now because they get a return chance at Liverpool later on this month. That should be the last game of January, and I think that one's going to do more to sort out the top four than anything else. If Everton win, you're looking at chaos because I think Liverpool's got the more talented team. I think they have a better shot at holding their spot in the top four than Everton does. I think Liverpool is the more dangerous team in a cup draw. But having said that, just Everton, what they can do with actual money, I'm looking forward to this because they haven't made the Champions League in a while.
Well, and then when you look at what even more crazy, possibly, is if you look at 11 through 20 on the table, there's only 5 points that separate those teams. 5 points for 10 teams.
Yeah, West Ham just early. Just late last year, West Ham United secured the rights to the new or to the London Olympic Stadium to redevelop it because Upton Park is a dump. It's possible that West Ham, I mean, they're not going to be able to move into it, I think, until 2016-2017 season, so October 2016. So you're looking at about 16 months from now. West Ham do not need to open up their new park, which is one of the most storied clubs in all of England, all of London, in Division One or into the Championship. That's if I'm
right.
West Ham right now. This is the year to go all in. Sunderland are garbage. Crystal Palace won't stay up. This may be the year that Fulham finally goes down. And you want to talk about a team that's dodged bullets for the longest time? I don't know how they do it, but this may be the year that finally happens.
Back in the day. Chelsea wanted to the original group to form Chelsea wanted to be called I think it was Fulham Football Club. So little food for thought there.
That's a good one. I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out. Anything going on this week until we speak again on Wednesday?
Everyone, watch your Twitter feed or watch the Nashville FC Twitter feed. And keep your eye on the February 1st date. We'll leave it at that. We should have an announcement or some details coming up in the next day or two of what that exactly means. But go ahead and pencil. Plus, it's my birthday. So, but go ahead, everyone out there in the soccer community, pencil February 1st to be at a location to be announced. How about that? Is that too cryptic?
I liked it. I saw on my timeline some last night that quite a few of the people got an email, and there was a lot of excitement with it. So, any other details you care to divulge on that?
There was a newsletter that explained some high level stuff last week, and then yesterday we gave our members a sneak peek at the uniforms. We finally got some renderings on what they're going to look like, and I love it. Everyone that's seen them is like, I can't wait to buy one of each. Somebody wants to buy some for their kids. So a lot of hard work going into it, and it's starting to pay off.
All right. Then check that out, NashvilleFC.net. We're at HasBeenSports.com. This has been From the Spot, brought to you by Has Been Sports and the Titans Pro Shop. Until next weekend, everyone take care.
Come on, Chelsea.
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
Thank you.